Okay.
I normally see the green one.
So I think they're not entitled.
I'm going to call for nomination on the floor. Members should nominate. If one member is nominated, there is no other nomination, that member will be declared a chairperson. But if there are more than one nomination, it means we will have to vote by a show of hands. So I'm not going to take a lot of time. I'll just call for nomination and then...
Honorable
Peterson Matunga.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Good morning to everyone. I propose the name of Mr. Gum to be our chairperson today. Thank you.
Second Chair.
Any other nomination? Then Honorable Nassel.
I think Honorable Gum is best for the job.
Okay. So Honorable Gum, you have been elected acting chairperson. Can you please come and take the hot seat?
Good morning, thank you very much. Also to the Honourable Boinamo who joined us. I see he's left now again. Maybe he would have found our committee quite interesting, you should tell him. I know him quite well. Good morning to everyone. I don't know whether everyone here knows everyone. Most of us know each other, but maybe just quickly if we can just start to introduce ourselves. Starting from the Honourable McIntosh, then we'll go around like this.
And my name's Graham, and my surname is McIntosh, and I'm a member of the committee.
The name is Manny De Freitas, I'm a member of the committee.
San Bonani, Nyunokaya Wagamnesi, Ilunga Le Committee, Nebo.
Per Peterson, a member in this committee.
Masizole Mnasela Ilumule the committee. Diable.
Edimatonsi, committee secretary.
I'm Andre Gaum, I'm member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Edin Semen. I do research for the committee.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Cecil Solz. I'm the chief director responsible for intergovernmental relations in Home Affairs.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Jackson McKay. I'm DDG Immigration Services with the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm John Carnison, Chief Director for Policy, Planning and Reporting.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Leon Peel. I'm from the Planning Section in Home Affairs.
Okay, thank you very much. We have an important presentation to be made to us this morning. We, all of us, are a bit pressed for time as well, I must say, at the same time, because there are various clashes taking place in Parliament, including an EPC Extended Public Committee that is ongoing at the moment. But let me hand over. I don't know who is going to lead the presentation from your side, but let us then hand over and ask you to lead the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, could I say I can't be here and I wouldn't have, but seems to me like the ideal set of officials to ask about that aircraft that landed at Waterproof Air Base about 2 weeks ago. But I won't do that, and there is a debate tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll call the minister to account, because that's the right person. Just don't worry, I'm just making a silly, humorous comment.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, the chairperson, honourable members, once again. My apologies for the Director General that couldn't be with us this morning, chairperson. He has a pressing engagement with the auditors. As you know, we are having our annual audit, and it's a serious issue for the DG and ourselves as well. And he is attending to that matter with the auditors. He had asked me to lead the delegation to do this presentation. Chairperson, the outline of the presentation basically will deal with the background to the NDP, or the National Development Plan. We will look at the key strategic objectives of the National Development Plan, the six pillars of the NDP, and the key targets of the NDP. We will then have a look at the mandate of the Department of Home Affairs in support of the National Development Plan 2013. We will look at the approach to implementation and implications of the National Development Plan for the Department of Home Affairs. What we have done in Section 8, Chairperson, was to link our strategic targets in our strategic plan to the National Development Plan. And I'm not going to go through that part of the presentation, because I'm sure that the committee members have perused the document and see how we have aligned our targets in our strategic plan to those targets. And then we look at the way forward. Chairperson, with regard to the background, the National Development Plan 2030 is built around a vision for South Africa and a clear national agenda for boosting growth, eliminating poverty, and reducing inequality. The NDP provides a broad strategic framework to put the economy and society on a new trajectory. There must be consensus on the priorities, key programs, and roles and responsibilities of government, business, labor, and civic organizations. And the NDP points out that while government will play a significant role, all sectors of society are called upon to make the plan a reality. The 2014 budget will mark the beginning of a process through which government departments and agencies will align their planning and expenditure to the NDP. Although we have already started to align to the NDP, Chairperson and honorable members, the when we start planning on our 2014 plan going forward, it will be informed fully by the objectives of the National Development Plan. The goals of the NDP have been part of the strategic planning and budgetary processes for 20 years, but service delivery has fallen short due to lack of effective planning, inadequate state capacity, and unclear lines of responsibility. A large part of the NDP is therefore about proper planning, building public sector capacity, and enhanced accountability chains. The next medium-term strategic framework will identify the NDP priority objectives and actions over the next five-year term of government. These priorities will be reflected in departmental strategic plans with key actions set out in the annual performance plan. Executive authorities and Parliament will hold departments and ministers accountable for meeting these objectives. The key strategic thrust of the National Development Plan is the following. The first is eliminating poverty. It is a key strategy, and it is about creating jobs for more people through robust growth of the economy. The second one is reducing inequality, mainly through improved quality of education and training, especially for black people. The key targets for the 2030 NDP plan, by 2030, the number of households living below 418 rand per month per person should fall from 39% to zero. It talks to the total eradication of extreme poverty. And the level of inequality as measured by the Gini coefficient should fall from 0.7 in 2009 to 0.6 in 2030. South Africa is probably the most unequal country globally. The objectives of the plan are the elimination of poverty and the reduction of inequality through six pillars. The first one being uniting South Africans of all races and classes around a common program to eliminate poverty and reduce inequality. Secondly, to encourage citizens to be active in their own development, in strengthening democracy, and in holding their government accountable. The third one is to raise economic growth, promoting exports, and making the economy more labor-absorbing. The fourth one is the focusing on key capabilities of both people and the country. Capabilities include skills, infrastructure, social security, strong institutions, and partnerships both within the country and with key international partners. The fifth one is to build a capable and developmental state, and the sixth pillar centers around strong leadership throughout society that work together to solve our problems. The key targets of the National Development Plan 2030 is the employment of from 13 million in 2010 to the employment of 24 million people in 2030. Raising the income from 50,000 rand a person to 120,000 rand. The increasing the quality of education so that all children have at least 2 years of preschool education and all children in grade 6 can read, write, and count. Establish a competitive base of infrastructure, human resources, and regulatory frameworks. Reducing poverty and inequality by raising unemployment, bolstering productivity and income, and broadening the social wage. By ensuring that professional and managerial posts better reflect the country's demography. And broadening ownership to historically disadvantaged groups, and providing quality health care while promoting health and well-being, as well as establishing effective, affordable public transport. Targets continue to is the production of sufficient energy at competitive prices, ensuring access for the poor, while reducing carbon dioxide per unit of power. Ensuring that all people have access to clean running water in their homes, making high-speed broadband internet available to all at competitive prices, realize a food trade surplus and one-third produced by small-scale farmers or households, entrenching a social security system covering all working people with social protection for the poor and other groups in need, such as children and disabled persons. Realizing a developmental, capable, and ethical state that treats citizens with dignity. Ensuring that all people live safely with an independent and fair criminal justice system. Broadening social cohesion and unity by making use of the talents and resources of all South Africans while taking firm steps to redress past inequities. Playing a lead role in continental development, economic integration, and human rights. Chairperson, the approach to implementation of the National Development Plan in government or in governmental process is the integration of these proposals into departmental implementation plans. The NPC Chairperson, if I may, there might be confusion on the document in front of you. We have moved that slide to slide 9. It was, I think, slide 11. It was wrongly placed in the presentation. The NPC working with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation through existing channels will advise departments, provinces, and local government on integrating the NDP proposals into their implementation plan. Proposals will also be included in the medium-term strategic framework from 2014 onwards. Another arm of implementation is the private sector and civil society to identify aspects to get involved in. The private sector, corporate foundations, labor movement, NGOs, the media and religious bodies will be mobilized to play an active role in the implementation of the National Development Plan. There will also be, as a third leg, or implementation approach, the piloting of new proposals and feeding lessons into policy processes. This is working with government and other social partners. The NPC will undertake piloting to test proposals, demonstrate effect, and feedback into policy processes. And these three zones, Chairperson, where they overlap, those of government plans, the involvement of private sector, the piloting of proposals feeding into policy lessons, this will be what is called the transformation zone, which is the interaction between government implementation, contribution of social partners, and lessons from pilots will bring about change. Growing this will build trust between key players and increase investor confidence. And this, I think, is the key to the National Development Plan, the fact of that it is it involves both government as well as the private sector and civil society. With regard to the mandate of the Department of Home Affairs in support of the National Development Plan 2030, the identity, civil registration, and immigration systems of the Department of Home Affairs are key enablers of access to rights and services and the efficient and secure functioning of the state and civil society. Chairperson, we liken the mandate or the Department of Home Affairs as the backbone of government. That without the Department of Home Affairs, there will be no structure to affix other departments on, because everything, we supply the enabling documents. We deal with both citizens as well as non-citizens. We document them, and the documentation that they carry enables them to transact with state. And as the Department of Home Affairs, we are thus key in in supporting the National Development Plan, we believe. One of the pillars of the NDP is the building of a capable state that can play a decisive role in development and the reduction of poverty. The Department of Home Affairs has embarked on a large-scale modernization program that will put in place secure, integrated identity and immigration systems. This is a key enabler for the state to deliver services to all citizens and foreign residents more efficiently and securely at lower costs. Social cohesion and nation building is promoted through providing the same services to all citizens through over 400 service points and through involving the community in government through structures such as stakeholder forums. through its core mandate, the Department of Home Affairs is connected to every citizen and to all foreign nationals that have entered South Africa or have applied to enter. In the first instance, through its server registration and status determination. I'm sorry, I'm on page. Sorry, we're on page. On page 11. No, it's mandate. Oh, it's page 9 on the. My apologies, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The movement of that one slide has caused all of this confusion. My apologies for that.
Tell us every time which page it is now.
Okay.
Because it seems we must go backwards sometimes. In our documentation.
We'll swap. We are on page 9, Honourable Chairperson. In the first instance, through its civil registration and status determination mandate, the Department of Home Affairs confers citizenship and hence status and rights. To fulfill this role, it must capture critical events in our lives like our birth, marriage, death, and the birth of our children and protect the unique identity of every individual. Secondly, the Department of Home Affairs plays a crucial role in our integration into the global community by enabling our citizens to travel abroad and by regulating and facilitating immigration. Only the Department of Home Affairs is mandated to authorize the entry or exit of persons into South Africa. It is responsible for asylum seekers and refugees, the enforcement of immigration laws, and for consular functions in our foreign missions. The NDP emphasizes the importance of immigration in domestic and regional development and the role of the Department of Home Affairs in facilitating immigration and the movement of persons across borders. I am now on page, on slide number 10, Chairperson. Thirdly, the identity, civil registration, and immigration systems of the Department of Home Affairs are key enablers of access to rights and services and the efficient and secure functioning of the state and civil society. One of the pillars of the NDP is the building of a capable state that can play a decisive role in development and in the reduction of poverty. In this regard, the Department of Home Affairs has embarked on a large-scale modernization program that will put in place integrated identity and immigration systems. This is a key enabler for the state to deliver services to all citizens and foreign residents through more efficiently and securely at lower costs. Social cohesion and nation building is promoted through providing the same services to all citizens, like I said, through 400 service points and through involving the community in government through structures such as stakeholder forums. The next slide, Chairperson, I've already spoken to. I will now move to slide number 12 and look at the implications of the NDP for the Department of Home Affairs. With regard to building a capable and developmental state, the state must have the capacity to lead development and drive national agenda as set out in the 12 priorities of government and the NDP. In this regard, the Department of Home Affairs can contribute significantly to the need to be safe and feel safe, create decent employment through growing the economy, build a strong economic infrastructure network, and contribute to a better and safer Africa and the world. With regard to improving service delivery, the Department of Home Affairs will use its modernization program to build on the advances made in improving the efficiencies and improvement of turnaround times of key enabling documents. The Department of Home Affairs, through its Learning Academy, is investing in human capital to drive the transformation agenda of government and also to provide access to adequate services. With regard to introducing information technology solutions, the DHA modernization program will have far-reaching positive implications for government, business, and the Department of Home Affairs. I'm on page 13. With regard to professionalizing the public service, the Department of Home Affairs can contribute significantly to a professional public service through effective human resource management and the Learning Academy supported by the various leadership and development courses on offer to all staff. We can also do this by recruiting the right cadre of manager and staff with the right values and skills and capabilities, and the creation of an adequate pool of managers for a single public service. And this would need to be underscored by an effective performance management system. With regard to strengthening delegation and accountability, the department is rolling out delegation of powers supported by effective capacity building and systems, as well as enhancing accountability through proper governance, proper implementation strategies, plans, risk management, and monitoring. And the Department of Home Affairs is minimizing the scope of fraud and corruption by ensuring financial systems are in place and managed properly, as well as secure business processes and systems. With regard to facilitating the objective to facilitate faster and more inclusive economic growth, there is a need for immigration and refugee policies, legislation and systems processes, which will address national priorities and maximize benefits and reduce risks to the country. An example is some kind of permit to enable labor flows within SADC to be managed. Some of the issues proposed in the NDP are improving data collection, coordination, and analysis as a matter of urgency, easing the entry of skilled migrants, countering xenophobia by conducting sustained campaigns, effectively addressing the rights and vulnerabilities of migrants and addressing their specific needs, introducing the support programs to regularize migrant residents, ensuring better and more consistent law enforcement by protecting victims and prosecuting perpetrators, and strengthening transnational infrastructure like transport, electronic communications, and banking services. There is also a need to ensure the secure, effective, and efficient mass transport of people and goods across land and sea and air borders to contribute towards the security and the development of South Africa. And efficient and secure ports of entry reduce the cost of doing business, encourage trade, and enable regional development. And this will be one of the main goals of the Border Management Agency that we are in the process of setting up. The NDP calls for a SADC visa to boost tourism, and this requires secure and well-managed borders. The modernization program of the Department of Home Affairs provides for trusted traveler programs to attract visitors and facilitate their secure entry and exit rapidly. This can be linked to the development of SADC and relations with key international partners such as Brazil, Russia, India, and China. The Department of Home Affairs will thus contribute to security, stability, and reducing levels of corruption. Focus on trade representation and diplomatic presence in fast-growing markets in Asia, Brazil, and Africa, as well as implement a focused regional integration strategy with an emphasis on reducing red tape
corruption and delays. Chairperson, with regard to the objective to reduce fighting corruption and enhancing accountability, the implementation of the DHA counter-corruption strategy with specific emphasis on deterrence, prevention, analysis, and education, we believe, will play a role in achieving this objective, and as well as strengthening the role of the department in the multi-agency anti-corruption system, and dealing efficiently and effectively with cases of misconduct and ill discipline to ensure high ethical standards and a zero tolerance towards corruption, as well as strengthening accountability and responsibility of public servants by enhancing accountability for actions taken, particularly in matters involving public resources, and improving oversight over public entities. Chairperson, with regard to the goal or objective of transforming society and uniting the nation, we believe that the department plays a key role in this. The department's identity and immigration systems are critical enablers of nation building, development, stability, cheaper government, lower cost of doing business, access to rights, and all of these are linked and relate closely to the DHA modernization program and the professionalization of the public service. The identity systems are a key element in reducing poverty, ensuring access to basic rights, and, of course, growing the economy. Achieving and protecting a comprehensive, reliable national population register is key to securing the identity and citizenship of citizens, and the whole value chain must be secured by appropriate systems managed by a patriotic professional staff that is supported by an aware public and the whole of government. The management of immigration to a greater extent than in the case of civics is dependent on a whole of government approach, and the level of management of the state as a whole at the levels of policy, strategy, and at an operational level. The department needs to modernize its systems and processes through the appropriate use of information technology in order to overcome its service delivery and security challenges and fully deliver against its mandate. The initiatives implemented by the department have already contributed significantly to support equity issues such as race, gender, and disability. And the department will make use of campaigns to deliver effectively against its mandate, both for the civics and immigration environment. Chairperson, from page 18 to page 32 is our annual performance plan, and we have aligned that to what we believe are the objectives or targets of the NDP, and because members are au fait with our plan and have perused the document, we believe that we will not. We request that we don't go through through the plan. I will then end, Chairperson, with our way forward on page 33. As indicated earlier in the presentation, this is work in progress, and the NPC, working with the DPME, will advise departments, provinces, and local governments on integrating these proposals of the NDP into their implementation plans. And the proposals will also be included in the medium-term strategic framework from 2014 onwards. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay. Members of Kumati, any questions from your side? Honorable De Freitas, then Honorable Marcella.
Thank you, Chair. I did read through the documents, very interesting. And I it's all very straightforward. What I am concerned about is the details actually making these essentially wish list a reality. So what I wanted to ask is, obviously it's too long and detailed for us to have a look at, but I'm presuming that in each case there's a detailed action plan in each case, and that there are milestones and monitoring trackings that you would monitor at regular intervals to make sure that objectives are being met. I just want to confirm that is the case, because a wish list needs to be translated into an action plan, and then that needs to be followed that it's actually happening and monitored. So if you could just tell us about that that's the case, and perhaps a little bit of detail in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Mine is a few questions, some comments. Well, the first one on page 5, it's a grammatic error, which I think when you talk about the reducing inequality, a key strategy mainly through improving, not improve quality of education and training. And I see that with the emphasis on is on black people in particular, which I do believe that right now it would be like shooting ourselves on the foot to say that it is the only race group that we need to empower. I can assure you, the impression there might be that when you talk about black people, you are referring to black African people only. So it should be more defined so that it makes sense of what we're wanting to achieve, notwithstanding, of course, the fact that the majority of black African people remain victims of the historic challenges that we've had in the past. I just want to make sure that we don't lose focus. And I went to Pretoria recently, Chair. I thought I was in Kuleto with white people being the residents in that community, and I was shocked with a high degree of poverty, and sometimes people, as you are driving, you don't see any black person asking for food. Instead, it is white South Africans on the street. That is a picture that we don't want to see. We don't want to reverse what has happened in the past, but rather to improve for the better. And I like what you have said below. Even the president has indicated to that. Poverty is no longer entrapped among particular racial groups, but it is something that is expanding across all backgrounds, across all people with different backgrounds. Hence, 418 rands per month per person by 2013 should change from the 39% to zero. I fully subscribe to that. Page 6, Chair. Let me rather go to page 7. Sorry, in terms of what I'm saying here. I would like to just get an understanding in terms of your contribution to this plan. When the employment, you're talking about employment that 13 million in 2010. In 2013, the plan is saying that we're looking at 24 million. How do you see the contribution by Home Affairs to that in real terms, so that we get an understanding of what role would you want to play? Page 9, Slalom. It's simply the page 9 on my document is what Home Affairs has been doing since 2010. I was triggered yesterday when someone called me saying, if I want to ask Home Affairs if my brother who traveled from Beijing, landing in South Africa early this morning, which seat or which flight is he on? Will Home Affairs have the information? I must say I was cut mum on that process. I said, no, I don't know the answer. Let me get back to you. And I must say, until this person calls back and say, oh, well, I just got the answer. I don't even know what the answer was. But I would like to know what the advanced passenger processing system, which we have used in 2010, which I believe it is the system that has empowered us to say the statement that we are putting here. Are we through that system able to know who is aboard our flight, be it a domestic or international flight, whether we know where they are sitting and who are the persons that are sitting in a particular seat of a particular flight, and the risk that they may pose to the country. Page 10, Chair. I would like to get an understanding. I just want to ask the department to expatiate on the statement here that the DHA has embarked on a large-scale modernization program that will put in place integrated identity and immigration systems. This is a statement that I would like you to simplify for the committee, just for me and probably others to understand it better. The last one, Chair, is on page 14. I promise you I don't want to go against your statement that you don't have much time. It's just that this necessitated some questions. The first question, will you please explain the new permitting system that you want to use within SADC to manage the inflows and outflows of persons? It's quite vague. I wouldn't understand, for instance, for which countries you want to target and when are you intending to implement it and what kind of a permitting regime compared to the current regime that we have, and when do you intend to implement it? That's for my understanding. I would appreciate. Then when you say you're easing the entry of skilled migrants, how do you intend to do that, sir? We have asked in the budget votes, for instance, that, and I mean the minister admitted that there needs to be different ways to manage this process, and she made references to car guards and people who should be doing much more contribution to the country, and they are doing something else that they should not be doing as she intended. So I just need to get an understanding of whether the department shares her views and what you intend to do to make sure that this is realized. The very last question, in countering xenophobia by conducting sustained campaigns, so will this campaign include the suggestion by the NHCR in a recent conference they had in Gauteng, where they put a proposal that there needs to be an act that criminalizes xenophobia in particular as a crime, so that this becomes a deterrent? As we know, we don't have much statistics of how many people were arrested in 2008, and if they were arrested, how far are they in the criminal justice system? Are they on trial? Have they been sentenced? If they were released, what is their contribution in the current situation that we're seeing in some places in the country, where we can see the emergence of the tendencies that we've seen in 2008? And also, do you think the department will support this proposal by the NHRC? And if at all, what do you think you would suggest? If not, why? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I also just have a question to take one of Honorable Kasela's points further, and that is, you know, every year in the budget debate, we make mention of the lengthy processes and red tapes and so on. So, what we actually also put in the budget vote debate was that if we want to attract skilled migrants, then we need a more simplified, it appears to us in any event, yes, we need people who do their job more effectively and postal and so on, but we also need maybe a simplified system or something to cut the red tape to make it really effective in terms of controlling them, but easy and quick. Do you have something specifically in mind to make sure that that happens, if we have any hope to attract the, what was it, 50,000, how many migrants, within a reasonable period of time, or is it only a question, of now trying to make sure that the officials actually do their job properly and so on? Are you planning to simplify your systems and make it easier to ease up the flow of skilled migrants? Thank you. Over to you, Mr. McGay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable. I will, as far as some of the questions will be answered by my team, will be here, Dr. Carnison, and will deal with the issue raised by Honorable Fraser with regard to the plan and its monitoring of that plan. Chairperson, if I may start with...
Can you please use your mic, because otherwise we can't...
My apologies. We note, Honorable Nasella, your comments on the black people and the comments that you made in with relation to the issues on page 5, and we will definitely take note of that. I think we slipped in that black people. I was trying to confirm whether it is in the actual plan, the NDP, but I can't seem to get that, and I will just check if it is actually contained in the plan, or is this our own wording. With regard to the employment and the role of the department in raising it from 13 to 14 million, I think, yeah, the role that the department plays is related to the issues raised by the Honorable Chair and yourself, Honorable Nasella, is how can we create conducive conditions in South Africa through our Immigration Act for companies to do business in South Africa? Because by doing business in South Africa, you are creating jobs for South Africans as well. And we should look at, and we are looking at our, as you know, at our immigration regime currently, with regard to our policy in terms of lessening the red tape burden that people have, as well as the ceilings we have set as well in terms of how much money is needed to set up a business in South Africa. Does it exclude certain businesses from doing business in South Africa? Does it grow SMMEs in South Africa? And what is our, and in that way, I believe we can play a positive role in creating jobs in South Africa. Is to look at our business permits that we offer. We have to look at, and we are, as you know, in the process of reviewing all the of reviewing the requirements for these permits in South Africa. That is one way of doing it. We also believe through cutting through the red tape of attracting skilled migrants in South Africa, because attracting skilled migrants into South Africa actually creates jobs in South Africa as well, because the skilled migrants come with their families, they require people to assist them in their homes. They require, there's a job creation in itself when you get migrants into your country. Chairperson, actually what we haven't done as the Department of Home Affairs is really have a look at the positive aspects of migration and the benefits of migration into South Africa. And I think we need to start quantifying that, so that we start to look at immigration differently, not as one as we see it now as being a burden, and the asylum seeker process and systems that are bogged down because of labor or unskilled labor movement into the country, but that we actually look at what is the positive spin-offs of immigration, And when we have done that, it will link directly to what we are trying to achieve with regard to the ND, the National Development Plan. Chairperson, I'm going to talk to the issue as well of how are we going to deal with attraction of skilled migrants. Again, indeed, as you have suggested, it's about cutting the red tape. Currently, skilled migrants coming into South Africa, their wives can't work, for instance. And when they have a company spouse permit, which doesn't enable them to work. Now, most of these skilled migrants, their wives also are skilled in most cases. And we should have a look at relaxing the requirements there and allowing them to work, as well as the graduates, how we deal with graduates, foreign graduates in South Africa. Our policy now is to look toward at granting such graduates on graduation, looking at giving them work permits or job seeker permits while they are in South Africa, rather than losing those graduates by them returning home to their home country. So we are looking at easing the requirements and the red tape among those. We are also looking at conferring a permanent residence on some highly skilled people as well, rather than giving them the opportunity to apply for permanent residence, rather than having to go through the work permit route. Would also be one way of attracting skills to the country, and then you would also be sure that you have it on a permanent basis. All of these, Chairperson, is part of our review of our policy on immigration policy to make it able to attract skills to South Africa. Chairperson, I'll now move with regard to the question on the APP. The APP, or the Advanced Passenger Processing, it's basically a passenger manifest that we receive in electronic form. It tells us who are the people on the flight. So it gives us the name and the passport details of all the people on the flight. It also allows us, although we have not bought part or implemented the second part of the APP yet, which is called the name passenger record. It is called the NPR, it is also called the NPR, the name passenger record. With the name passenger record, it gives you a bit more information. It would give you the itinerary of the person. It will give you where the person is seated on the flight. It will give you his baggage, how much baggage the person has and carries on him or her. It will give you the information in terms of at which hotels the person is staying, if it has been booked through an agent. So it gives you much more information that would enable you to build up a profile of every passenger coming into South Africa. So if you look at minimizing risk of people coming into the country, you would be able to, through that kind of information, be able to build up a risk profile of every passenger. Every passenger on that flight, and who stands out as a big or as a risk to our national security with regard to the information that is given. Of course, this information would need to be backed up by other information, intelligence information. So it is not really the Department of Home Affairs alone that would be able to build up that profile, but in working with other partners within the JCPS cluster, like the intelligence services, the police intelligence, as well as the police, you would be able to use that information to build up a profile. The modernization...
Sorry to interrupt, but just on that point. So you actually get these electronic records, but what do you really do with it at the moment? It's not linked up with other apartments. You don't, there's not a system that tells you immediately this person is a fugitive or whatever the case may be. Do you actually do something with it at the moment? Who goes through it? Who checks it? Who knows? Where are the systems in that regard? Or don't we really have that in place?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this system was used effectively during the 2010 World Cup and helped us to stop a lot of soccer hooligans coming into South Africa. The system is a live one. It is linked to our risk engine, and the risk engine, on the risk engine is linked the lost and found passports. The lost passports. Lost and stolen passports. On it is linked what is called our stop list. Those are undesirable people that we would not allow into the country. It is linked to our police wanted list. It is linked to Interpol's list of wanted persons. It is linked to a UN list of those people that are barred from traveling. So it has all of these, what we call stop lists, or lists that's linked to our risk engine. This, the APP runs against that risk engine, and if there is a, what we call a hit between the person carrying the document and the person listed there, the travel is immediately stopped. Electronically it stops it. You are not allowed to board. It gives a what is called a notice at check-in. It says do not board at check-in. The person, the airline is then required to call our 24-hour operational center at Home Affairs, at our headquarters. We would then have a look at why is the person being stopped and not allowed to travel to South Africa. If it is a serious matter, we would request that they not allow the person to board at all, or that they take other secondary action against the person and not allow him or her to travel. If it is a lost passport, for instance, there are a lot of South Africans that apply for new passports because they can't find their old passport. Now, that old passport, although you have not reported it to the police, we immediately link it to our lost and stolen passports. So what happens is South Africans then can't board on flights either to come back to South Africa or to fly out of South Africa. And in those cases, because when they phone us, we would allow people to continue traveling to South Africa. So indeed, it is a live system, Honorable Chairperson. And it is linked to our risk engine. The modernization, what do we mean when we talk about our large-scale modernization program? Chairperson, this is our renamed Who Am I Online that we are referring to, our ambitious modernization program to make the Department of Home Affairs paperless. I'm sure that the committee has been briefed on, I think, on the modernization program. I think it has been done already. And that is the program that we are talking about here, Chairperson. With regard to the SADC permit, and when do we intend to implement? Minister has mentioned this in a budget speech. We are in the process of looking at the at finalizing this matter, and we will be making an announcement soon, and of course bring it, I think, to the portfolio committee again when we report on how far are we with our policy process with regard to immigration. With regard to countering xenophobia and the call to make it a crime, indeed, the department, I'm sure, will support such a proposal. Already, the department views it, and government views xenophobia as a criminal activity. That is why it is the responsibility of the Department of Justice and the police now, and not the Department of Home Affairs, to look into these matters. It is treated and seen as a criminal activity, and we would definitely support such a proposal as the department. Chairperson, I will ask John to deal with the outstanding question on the monitoring of the plan.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Essentially,
yes. Well, in responding to the question, thank you very much, Mr. McKay. That's on the last question. My question was more detailed to the extent that I even asked what do you think, in your view, would be the shape and form as per the suggestions. Would you go with the route that says, yes, we need to have this act, which is an independent act, in particular, saying there must be a xenophobic act making it a crime that should be a standalone crime. Would you go with that, or you support the sentiments that go with the NHCR in general? Because I wanted to hear your view in specifically to that. And the last question actually was the other question which I've raised, which you responded, but to the detail I lost you there when you spoke about this permit, the overhaul of the permit system, of the permitting system. You spoke about allowing the graduates upon graduation, who have a migrant, foreign migrant background, that you would actually afford them an opportunity to take up a work permit, but other forms of permit, I lost you there. If you have time, Trey, if I could actually have a second bite on that, just to get clarity. Thank you.
Chairperson, with regard to the xenophobia thing, I think it's the sentiment that we support. We have not studied the document, we have not seen it, and I'm sure after we have seen that, we would be able to comment on it. But the sentiments, I think, are supporting. And like I said, the sentiments are those that I believe is government, that we see xenophobia as a criminal activity. Thank you, Chair.
If I may, Honourable Chair and members. No, all plans that are linked to a budget have to be developed according to Treasury regulations, which are audited. They have to be smart, specific, measurable, time-bound, achievable, and so on. And they have to have indicators which are measurable. We are audited against those. And those indicators have up to 3, 4, 5 pages of how we're going to calculate, measure, collect the data, and analyze. And we're getting better at this. Last year, this very committee pointed out some of our indicators were fuzzy. We corrected that mid-year, which is highly unusual, to make them better. This year, the auditors have declared that our targets are now measurable. But we still have to do those detailed descriptions, and so that we tighten up. So that really a director of planning knows, I've said to him, we will have no targets that can't be measured. If we don't have systems to measure it, we won't do it in that way. We'll find another way of doing it that can be measured. So we take this monitoring seriously, as I say, the Treasury, the whole system of planning and budgeting is premised on being able to measure and monitor So, yeah, that is what we measure ourselves against those regulations and try and make sure all that is in place. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much. Last round of questions, Honorable Makuba and Honorable Bolton. Ahmad Tebe, sorry, and Honorable Bolton. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a comment. From the presentation itself, we still got a long walk to freedom. We still got three major challenges, which I don't have clarity on them. I don't understand what is happening, especially when you talk about skill shortage. Which skill are you talking about? Because really, here in our country, we still have people, these who are working as a petrol attendant from North South Africa, farm workers, waiters in all drugs, restaurants, passers all over the countries. I don't know, is that skill you're talking about? Second, this question of stats, which I always ask the department about it, that we don't even have a number of the people, those who are inside the country. Lastly, this question of corruption. All ports of entries. Every day, any moment, we still got people who are looking for bribes, and especially our officials. So I think it's both of us. We need to come up with a strategy to eliminate all those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine was around the issue of the skills development, as indicated on the NDP. The manner in which we are saying we're going to attract skills, I think it need not deviate from what we have been saying all these years, in terms of putting an emphasis on the critical skills shortage. And furthermore, I have a fear that we are opening up for something else. If we are saying, if we have the foreign national skills coming into our country in the manner of a spouse relationship, or spousal arrangement, we then are seeing as a country we are therefore going to also look into the related spouse, which is an issue for ambassadors. Maybe are we not creating many ambassadors in the country, or are we not opening up ourselves for people who will take advantage whenever they leave their country? They then carry on their spouses irrespective of the fact, whilst that is human and also safe for that particular individual. But I think as we deal with that, we need to look on that. I know we're in the boardroom, we're just discussing, but it is important that that message does not go out, because we may have, remember, we're dealing with a situation where most people are taking advantage of any loophole that we are creating. So we need to close up that particular loophole. Again, the emphasis on this, you see, when we talk about the skills attraction in the country, we're coming roughly every year with this 50,000 kind of people, which we have said is just an estimate. But in terms of us developing skills from within, we never emphasize that point. Always that the point that emerges is us attracting skills from outside, as opposed to building skills from within. And I think those two must run concurrent, so that at the end of the day, people are actually deriving skills from us, like we are borrowing skills from them. At some point we should to, we need to then have that particular target to say at this particular point we should be having a pool of those particular skills. Meaning as we talk about the nation building, then we have to also include how do we then build our nation around the integrated skills development. I think those are the things that I wanted to raise.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. We take note of the comments made by Honorable Matebe, and maybe I would link it to the skills shortage issue to the what Honorable Botmai has also noted. Thank you for those comments, Honorable Botmai. I think they are valuable and guides us in a way. When we talk about skills shortage, we're talking about those critical skills shortages, which we in the past called critical skills. So it would be high-end skills like our engineers, the skills that's needed by industry to grow, which we don't have in the country. We just don't have it. And if we don't have it, we need to get it from somewhere. And we can only get it through getting foreigners to come into our country to assist us with that. So it's really Honorable Matebe and Honorable Botma linked to those critical skills that we are talking about, not low-end skills that South Africans have and which we find as problematic in South Africa in terms of the mixed migratory flow and people abusing our asylum seekers process for that. We are talking about high-end skills here. And Honorable Botma, it is those high-end skills that we find that we fail to attract them if we cannot deal with the whole package, for instance. A family traveling engineer, traveling with his family, schooling for the child, study permits, and the wife, if he can't find any job or his wife is just going to sit around in South Africa, he would go somewhere else to find a country where he can migrate to, where, for instance, his spouse would be able to work as well. And like I said, we find that in most cases where we have these high skills, we find that the spouses also have high skills. And and we are looking at that high end. But as you said, it's boardroom talk. We will be able to. Thank you for the advice, so that we are able to build on that. And the issue of when we spoke about creating employment and creating conducive conditions for companies to set up shop in South Africa. That needs to be linked to a skills transfer process as well, so that we are sure that when we get these high skills into South Africa, that those skills are transferred to locals, to South Africans, and we build up our skills base as well. So we should see that for every of these permits issued, that there is actually, you need to demonstrate that there is a skills transfer that is going to take place by the company or in the individual whilst they are in the country. Of course, you won't be able to deal with it. That's correct, yes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, I think you've pointed it out quite well now, because first of all, you know, it is important to know that, for example, if you want an engineer here, yeah, in an area that we have a lack of expertise in, he won't come here, for example, if his wife is also, you know, has a job in, let's say, wherever it might be, Brazil, and she can't work here, because she will be unhappy, she just won't come, and therefore he won't come. So it is more about, you know, looking at the package to attract the main skill that you actually need and want. And I think it's also important to note that these are not people who are going to be in competition with South Africans. These are critical skills that we don't have, so we need them here. We don't have them yet. Yes, of course, we should develop skills, and there should be an element to it, that there should be skills transfer taking place, as you say, but the main, but that is more indirect, as I see it anyway. The direct role in that regard is not for us as Home Affairs Department, but for the Department of Education. But there should be the skills transfer kind of requirement. In that sense, indirectly, we can contribute to the development of internal skills. Anyway, thank you very much to all the members, to the department as well. We would like to, obviously it seems to me that these permits and so on that we're talking about, the new permits and so forth, will have to be dealt with through legislation. So we are awaiting, we are in anticipation for that legislation coming to this committee. But then, on the other hand, in terms of simplifying your systems and so on that are not directly related to legislation, so we'd like you to keep us informed so that we can be sure that we are informed as far as that is concerned. Honorable Bothman, are you putting up your hand? Okay, I mean, question time is actually finished, but I'll allow you.
Yeah, Chair, just one question. Well, it's not a question as such, but in a way it will maybe provoke a certain understanding that will help them as they deal with this issue of skills. First of all, we need to ask ourselves, this person has got this excellent skill. Why is this country not using this person? Is it because they have access of such skill? Secondly, is it he's coming to our country, is it because of the kind of package that we are having as opposed to what he has in his country? Those things, why I'm raising these things, it's because we have an experience. One of the things that we've agreed upon at the takeover of this particular democratic government is that we need to work together so that we then share with our own brothers that were there before and also get the skills that they had. We educate each other. And until now, we don't have that skill. So I'm saying, when we talk in the boardroom, it's so easy that people will transfer skills. Nobody will give us his skill because he's living and surviving with that particular skill, unless we do something about that. So I think as we're talking about the issue of skills transfer, we need to ensure that we are doing something around that. That will force people to really do the transfer. I think our policies are so loose. People will never, because they should stay here and survive because they have that particular skill. So whilst we agree that the issue of skills development is not our core function, but we are saying because we are the ones who are issuing those permits, we need to ensure as well that certain policies are developed that will make people to adhere to whatever that we have in the country to develop skills for our own people. Thank you.
Thank you. We take notice of what you've said. As far as the minutes are concerned, we're not going to deal with the minutes now because the chairperson is not here. We will deal with that at the next meeting. Thank you very much. It seems that we have done our business and have a good day. The meeting